Okay, we're on page 260 on the top numbers. We are on the line which starts the Hislop Shusan about 10 lines down Amnam. And in the English, it's in the middle of the first paragraph. It says, however it is known. We are talking about creation. And the last thing that you talked about was the difference between a creation of something from nothing, as opposed to a creation through a creation process of what's referred to as the cause of reaction of Seder Istalshelus. And going into great detail, and at this point I'm going to say, because of how much we're able to cover in the course of an hour, I would say if you want a good summary of what we've done till now, just go online and listen to the previous. This is number 5. This is lesson number 5 on chapter 20, and we're 3 pages in. Usually by 3 pages in, we're already out of the chapter already. Mm-hmm. So we're going to be here for a while. But we could make the following known. She'iker his havas hayesh redover nifred legamri humimalchus de tzilus. That the primary enlivening of something, that it should recognize itself as a separate entity from Hashem, is from Malchus of Atzilus, from the creative aspect of God. This is the level of God. Malchus of Atzilus is what we refer to as the Shekhinah, the Divine Presence. It's also Adnai, when we say Baruch, not Baruch Atana, it's Atta Tavaya, but Aleph Dalet Nun Yud is also the creator aspect of God. In the Zohar, it's called the Lower Mother, it's called Matronisa, the Matron. All of these refer to Hashem as creator. The idea being that prior to this level of creator, everything exists in a total unified state. That's how he started out the letter. Yihu v'chayehu chad, yihu v'garmehu chad. Hashem and his life is one, Hashem and his limitations is all one. The main bringing into existence of limitations, though, comes from a very low level of Hashem. In other words, that which we recognize Hashem as creator. We have the ability of recognizing Hashem as creator. We are created, and being that we are created, there must be a creator. Given that we are able to indirectly deduce that there must be a creator, so that level of creator that we can relate to is just a little bit beyond our understanding. In other words, there's a story. Hillel Parach was a student primarily of the Tzemach Tzedek. Mm-hmm. He was one of the Tzemach Tzedek's shluchim. He sent them around the country, as the expression was. He was a fundraiser, but the fundraising was secondary to what he was able to accomplish in the colonies. He sent them to the Kherson region, which were all farms that had been established for Jews to get out of the congested cities of the Pale of Settlement. So they were like in the middle of nowhere. And being in the middle of nowhere, they needed to have people come in and keep them excited about Judaism. Mm-hmm. So he was given that his mission, but that I think it was either the Mittler or the Tzemach Tzedek, was that he should plant physical and reap spiritual. Plant physical because he was there. What was he there for? Everybody knew he was there to fundraise. But he wasn't there to fundraise. Fundraising was the excuse to go there.
Right.
And like people could say, oh, the fundraiser is here. But in the meantime, so what is he doing? He was taking care of the Jewish needs. Mm-hmm. So he was a scholar by the time he was 19 years old. And when he was 19, he found a difficulty in a piece of Talmud. He had heard that the author was a genius, and he's a genius, so he figures he's going to go have a conversation with the genius. You know, the two geniuses will get together. I'm not exactly sure what year it was. I think it would have to have been like 1811, or maybe if not 1812. So he strides into Liadi, and he says he wants an appointment with the Rebbe. And the secretary took a look at him and said, "How old are you?" He said, "I'm 19." He said, "No. 19-year-olds don't get appointments with the Rebbe. Sorry." He said, "But I have a question in Gemara." So he said, "Fine, go ask your Malamed." You know, it's like a real...
Is that if he's talking to
you? No, it's about the Alter Rebbe.
Oh, okay.
He said to him, "Go ask your Malamed." Malamed means you're like elementary school teacher. Yeah. You know, like, get out of here, kid. You're not wasting the rabbi's time. So he had enough chutzpah that what did he do is the Alter Rebbe had a trellis outside his bedroom window. He climbed up the trellis and hid under the Alter Rebbe's bed, with the intention that when the Alter Rebbe comes up to his room, he'll pop out from under the bed and he will ask his question. Ooh, what a good plan. Except...
Great idea.
He's lying there. The Alter Rebbe was not with what they call the schluffers. He didn't spend a lot of time sleeping.
Yes. Yeah.
So by the time he came around to his bedroom, so Hillel Parrish had fallen asleep already.
Uh-huh.
He was under the bed. And he saw, when Alter Rebbe walked in, he made some noise, and Hillel Parrish saw the Alter Rebbe wearing his slippers. The Alter Rebbe's slippers were, like, famous. Yeah, there's other stories about them. We're not going to go into the stories of the Alter Rebbe's slippers. He saw the slippers, and the Alter Rebbe said, "Smells like somebody needs to wash Nagelwasser."
Ooh.
And we fall asleep, so he goes, you know, you have to wash your hands in the morning first thing. So he fell asleep. It was nighttime. And he said, "Smells like somebody needs to wash Nagelwasser." Then he said that when a young man comes to ask a question about Erechin, which is a Gemara, and the Gemara deals with figuring out, a person says, "I'm giving the value of how much this person is worth to the temple." Okay, for the most part, it's based on what it says in the Torah. Yeah. A man between 20 and 50 is worth 100, a woman is worth 60, a man over 100, over 50 is worth 30, a woman is worth 10, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The whole prescription over there. So it's called figuring it out. That's what the word Erechin means. So he said when a young man comes and asks a question in the Talmud about figuring out people's worth, he said he should figure out his own worth first. And that's what he heard. He fell back asleep. The secretary came, Alter Rebbe left, the secretary came in, basically dragged him out from under the bed by his ears, and threw him out. And he did not get a chance to ask his question to the Alter Rebbe, because shortly thereafter, Napoleon attacked Russia, and they took it on the lamb. So he became a follower of the second Lubavitch Rebbe and his second Lubavitch Rebbe's son-in-law, who was a grandson of the first Lubavitch Rebbe. So his job was to encourage people to get involved with Judaism. So he said that before he came to learn Hasidus, there's a chapter in Shulchan Aruch that says, before a person davens in the morning, it's chapter, I think, Tzadik Beis, Tzadik Vav of Or HaChaim. It's the chapter's titled, "The Need to Have, to Arouse Kavana Before Davening." So this is in Shulchan Aruch. Mm. Okay, well, before a person stands up and davens Shemayna Esrei, he has to know, what is he doing? So it says over there that a person has to stand before God with a tremendous feeling of fear before the Almighty. So he said, before I learned Hasidus, so I used to think a dog was chasing me. How afraid would I be if a dog was chasing me? And he would actually have this sense of feeling that he's being chased by a dog. Then he would say, how would I feel if it was a bear that was chasing me? Okay, so he says this is a much greater fear. He says, so now, how would I feel about my fear of Hashem? Mm-hmm. So he says, once I started learning Hasidus, I realized that my definition of God was just a little bit bigger than a bear. So we can't do really much more than that. Because our definition of God, what we can relate to, is God is creator.
Yeah.
Right here he's saying, oh, by the way, God is creator, that's the bottom. That is the lowest level of godliness. That's what we can relate to. And we can't even relate to it directly. We can only relate to it indirectly. Oh, if we're here, we must have come from a creator. That's the best that we can do. It's because this is such a low level of godliness that there's a whole process we talked about up until now. That there is indeed the Arizal, which is really what he's trying to do over here, is to put the Arizal and Moshe Kurdavera together. The Arizal, who is this opinion of something called Yesh Ma'ayin, a creation of something and nothing, of the development of a quantum leap, a realization of God's limits. That's the way the Arizal sets up the creation process, as opposed to Moshe Kurdavera, who says it's all very ordered, step by step, cause effect, cause effect, cause effect, cause effect, cause effect. So the Arizal isn't coming to contradict that statement of that they took a cause and effect to create the world. He's coming to fill in the gaps for the shortcomings in that theory, which we've talked about before. So there is a diminution of godliness from the pure essential infiniteness of Hashem, which is called the Ein Sof, till the point of Hashem as creator. So there is indeed a diminution of godliness. There is less godliness because infiniteness doesn't relate to a finite world. So Hashem, in order to relate to a finite world and the idea of finiteness, of limitations, has to lower himself, so to speak, to a realm which is relatable to finiteness. Not that that level's finite, because we're talking here, this is Malchus of Atzilus. This is still the world of emanation. Emanation is still defined as being totally and completely united with Hashem.
All is free.
Pardon?
Infinity. They're all infinity.
Yeah. Okay, but this is an infinity which relates to finiteness.
Okay.
And you can understand, well, how could it's very simple. Because infinity is really comprised of every finite set. You want to think about that for a while, but not by driving. That's just a simple mathematical thing.
Mm-hmm.
Every finite set is within infinity. That means, okay, so infinity is beyond infinity. It's beyond this. It's like there's no way to relate to any specific. One compared to infinity is not a relatable relationship. But there's an infinite number of ones in infinity.
Right.
So therefore, this one does have some kind
relation.
Of relationship.
Correct.
To infinity. Or we could say infinity has some kind of relationship to this single one. Does that make sense? Yeah? You can say you don't. This is very tough stuff. Okay, even as I'm explaining this, I feel like my brain is right now going through like one of these stretcher things, going, just trying to be able to explain it. So the ability to relate to Hashem as creator allows us to relate to Hashem, and that then is because it's relatable to, because it's such a low level of godliness, it can relate to and create, bring something into existence, which is able to say, I am existing by myself. We do not see that we are totally and completely incorporated in a unity of Hashem. That's why when we say Shema, we cover our eyes. Because what are we saying? We're saying Hashem Echad. And saying Hashem Echad, it's Yesh Echad Ve'ein Sheni Lo. There's one and there's no two. It's not like there's one and there's another one and there's another one after that, or this is the first one, there's the second one. No, when we say Hashem Echad, it means that Hashem is one to the exclusion of all else. So we cover our eyes because I can see lots of stuff. It's like this, if we can't see anything, so there's nothing else there. It's just this oneness of Hashem that we're supposed to be trying to relate to when we say the Shema.
The senses of a limited being are almost deceiving.
Correct.
In some ways.
Yeah. Okay, so the this sense of self that we have is an expression of Specifically, the term which is used is Malchus. Malchus, which is the bottom of the 10 spheres. Jeff, you're familiar with the 10 spheres?
Yes.
Okay. So Malchus, which is the bottom of the 10 spheres, is specifically called Malchus. This was one of the questions that the Alter Rebbe was asked when he was arrested. They asked him, he was charged with treason and anti-government sentiment. And one of the questions that they asked him is, how come you put royalty at the bottom? The king should be at the top. Okay? But the 10 spheres, Malchus is right at the bottom. Okay? And he answers that question right now. Is because V'humem Malchus d'Atzilus Shenasa Atik Libriya. What happens is that the very bottom of the world of emanation becomes the very top of the next world, creation.
Right.
Being that Malchus is feminine. Feminine means the ability to receive. Okay?
Females create them.
Yes, but a mother has two functions. One is to be the recipient from dad. Two, to be an influencer over the kids.
Right, to give, right.
The main thing being the influencer over the kids.
Right.
So what happens is the feminine aspect of Hashem, which is being recipient of all this godliness from all the levels up before it,
right,
as a feminine, now becomes, takes on this masculine aspect of being influencer, controlling, of being in charge of the next lower levels. And then he says, why? Ki ein melech b'loy am. It's a statement from the Talmud. There's no king without a people. Am, he says elsewhere. The word am implies separation. A king is not a king over his own family.
Right.
Okay? What are the crown, what does the crown prince call the king?
Dad.
Dad.
Right.
Okay, so there has to be that separation there in order for the king to be a king. So in the world of Atzilus, in the world of emanation, so all the 10 spheres are totally and completely united with the infiniteness of Hashem. There's no separation whatsoever. And what do you get if you just have the infiniteness of Hashem with no separation? Nothing. You have infiniteness, and infiniteness begets infiniteness. Right. And you can't do anything with it. It doesn't get up.
But it has to be unrelatable.
Totally, completely unrelatable. Now that the function of Malchus is that it's no longer relating to this infinite unity of Hashem, but now has become, as he calls it, Atik of Bria, the beginning of the next world down, which Bria means creation, that those, I can't call them things even, that those entities which are part of the world of creation recognize their own limitations. Their limitations are not really limitations, like a neshama, for example. Neshamas are found in the world of Bria, souls. A soul is not limited to a body. How big is it? You can't ask that question because dimension. It doesn't have any dimension. It's dimensionless.
Dimensions don't work.
Yeah, it's dimensionless. So, the Riboy Hanivroyim Hishalkusim Shenivra Bekecha Insaif. And also, the great number of creatures, which are the product of the infiniteness of Hashem, and all their different divisions. How many different creatures could infinity come up with?
Infinite.
An infinite number of different creatures, each on its own level. Are in essence united. They're not totally one. There's a difference between united. United implies that two things still have an existence.
An identity.
But they exist only as one thing. The best example that we have, we don't really have a physical example for this. There are three examples that I can come up, and it's sort of like in descending order. The best example is...
Siamese twins?
That's two different entities altogether that just happen to be joint. That's just connected. That's not even unified. That's connected because they're two separate entities. There's John and Joe. your thought before you say something. You're just about to say something, and you have the thought, you know exactly how you're going to say it. It's already formulated, and even your tone of voice has already been decided. But at that point, it's still part of you. When you said it, it's outside of you. When you're about to say it, it exists as a separate entity because this is what you're thinking about to say, but it's still totally and completely part of you. There's like we couldn't dissect you and find that thought because it's not something that's additional to you. It's part of you. It is you. Mm-hmm. It's not it's part of you. It is you. An example which is a little less, as we go down, they get easier to understand, but they're not as good. The example that he gives in Tanya, in a couple places, is the ray of the sun before it's emitted from the sun. Mm-hmm. That the sun ray, before it leaves the surface of the sun, it is a ray, but it's nothing separate from the sun itself, because it hasn't been emitted yet. But it's about to be emitted. It's kind of like the same thing like the thought. Another example of yichud, which is not a very good example of yichud, is a cake. Because what's a cake? A cake is a cake. You walk into a bakery and you say, I want that cake. What is the cake? It's flour and sugar and shortening and egg and flavor, whatever else they put into it. But when you're buying it, you're not buying a composite of flour and sugar and oil, etc., etc. You're buying a cake. It's one thing now. It's a whole different thing. I mean, that would be even halachically correct, because what's the bracha on cake? Mezainis. What's the bracha if you were to say, take a spoonful of flour, and on that spoonful of flour, you're going to put a little bit of egg, a little bit of sugar, a little bit of oil, and put it into your mouth? You wouldn't say a bracha at all, because that's disgusting. That's gross. It wouldn't even be a bracha, because you've got this stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, so you can so you can understand that it's a cake. It's one thing. But it's not such a great example because under forensics you could analyze and come up with that. Those things are that way.
Separations, yeah.
Another example, similar along parallel, that is water. Water, what's the chemical name for water? Is H2O. Which, when you look at it, water is the building block of organic matter. Everything is comprised of water. That is, water is considered a base element.
Right.
But you can split water into two.
Right.
We did it. I did it in high school chemistry.
Sure. Electrolysis.
Okay. We stuck a positive one in this tube and a negative one in this tube. We separated. The hydrogen went to this tube. The water. The oxygen went to that tube. And we separated the water.
Right.
So you can kind of understand that the way that the world exists, it's not like water because it doesn't get separated. That's why the best example is the thought before you're about to say it, because there is nothing there. There's only you. But you got this thought, and you know there's a thought there.
Right.
And you know the thought's not you because you're thinking. There's you, and then you're thinking this thought. But there's nothing there. Okay? So, all these creatures, that they exist. How is it that they exist? Is because he uses this expression. He talked about this at great length in the second part of Tanya, Shar Yechud V'Amunah, all 12 chapters, is because of the amount of letters that are expressed by Malchus Pi Hashem, which is referred to another name for Malchus is the speech of Hashem, the mouth of Hashem. Uberuach piv kol tzavam, as it says, with the spirit of his mouth, Hashem created all of the hosts. That if we're referring to the creation, because it says in the Torah, Hashem said, let there be light. Hashem said 10 times in the first chapter of Bereishis, that the creation is accomplished by channeling the godliness through these letters of speech, you might say. And light, we talked about this at great length, and light is a composite of the energy which is drawn down through an aleph, a vav, and a resh. And rakia, space, is through, the godliness is drawn down through these like dyes of, how do you spell that type of dye? Like a dye maker?
D-Y-E.
Is it D-Y-E? Okay? Not color dye, but like a mold and dye maker. Yeah.
D-I-E.
D-I-E. It's D-I-E. Okay? So that it's through this, the godliness is coming through a specific pattern of a resh, a kuf, a yud, an ayin. And you put them all together, each one by itself doesn't do anything. But when you put them all together, they spell rakia, they spell firmament. And so it is with all the rest of these things. And as he spoke about over in the first chapter of Shari Yichud V'Amuna, that from the word dry land, you can extrapolate the word Evan, you can extrapolate the word rock, because dry land is just the general thing that it's called. God said, let there be a dry land. But what's the dry land comprised of? It's comprised of rocks and all the minerals that go into making the dry land, and all the other things that you find on the dry land can all be extrapolated through the word, from the word yabasha, from the word dry land. And the five articulates of speech, we are patterned after Hashem. And we look at ourselves, and it says, as it says, let's make man in our image, so we have a same composition as sort of like the way that Hashem relates to us as creator. So we have five organs of speech: the lips, the teeth, the tongue, the palate, and the throat. Each one of those is in charge of a different group of letters. Base, vav, mem, pei from the lips, dat from the lips, you dat latatz from the teeth, gichik from the throat. Each one showing that the vitality which is coming down into this creature is coming from a different place, a different expression. He calls that, and he called it before, the hei gevurois, the five levels of constraint, which the five levels of constraint we talked about before, just by the basic definition, is that the middle column of the ten spheres is comprised of Keser, crown, Das, knowledge, Teferis, beauty, Yisoid, foundation, and Malchus, kingship. So there's five of those. And each of the five contains all ten spheres. So the five severities are going to be Gvura of Keser, Gvura of Das, Gvura of Teferis, Gvura of Yisoid, Gvura of Malchus. Meaning that what is the final result? Why is it we have this middle column thing? We put so much emphasis on this like middle column, and we have the five kindnesses and the five severities, is because the top of this middle column is desire. The bottom of the column is final result. So you could ask the question, when you have a desire, what are you desiring? You're desiring the final result. And when you have a result, how is it that you have this final result? It's because you had a desire for it. So there is a direct connection from the very beginning of the process, because desire is how the whole thing starts with us. When we do anything, it's because we want to do this. At some point in the morning, we want to get out of bed. Even if it's because we have to go to the bathroom, it's the only reason. But there's a reason why we get out of bed. The final result is we get out of bed. And that's the way everything that we do is done. It's all based on we're doing it because we want to do it. Why do we want to do it? It's because we have the pleasure that's going to be derived from doing that thing, from the final result. From plans, you get nothing. That's why the Rebbe was so much against committees. Mm-hmm. The Rebbe just absolutely hated committees. Because what's a good committee meeting? Because we had such a good committee meeting that we decided when our next meeting is going to be. I've actually been on committees where after sitting for an hour and hearing people deliberating, they came up with a conclusion when they should next meet. Okay, so that doesn't do anybody anything. Yeah, so, and this same committee spent 8 months on a mission statement. Let's define who we are and what we're trying to do. 8 months. Okay, so no, the main thing, forget the committee and just do it.
Yeah.
I was actually went to one of these same committee meetings today, and I told the director that I really don't have any time for committee meetings. Just tell me what to do. You have the meeting, because when you have a meeting, now they're very important, because we had a meeting. Okay, we did something, we had a meeting. So just send me an email, tell me what to do. I'll do it.
I'll have to hold a committee meeting to figure out what that is.
Yeah, but I don't want to sit there for the hour for you to figure out to tell me what to do. Just tell me what to do. That's the bottom line. And that's why our world is called the world of revelation. Because we see we exist. And we understand if we exist, it must be because of a creator. So therefore, we can appreciate the creator in this world, in our own world. But the first 9 spheres that are part of this whole creation process before Malchus, they come into existence through cause and effect. Wisdom causes understanding. Understanding causes knowledge. Knowledge causes kindness. Kindness causes severity. Severity causes tiferes, etc. And there is a step by step by step, and you could see, you could plot it, you could understand why it is that Chachma by itself doesn't do anything. It has to have an understanding too. But understanding without the wisdom
is no understanding.
Right. So there's that interdependence there. There's a relationship between the cause and the effect.
Right.
The cause is no cause unless there's an effect.
Right.
It doesn't become a cause unless it did something.
Right.
And the effect can't exist without the cause.
Right.
So there is this Derenkel, this linkage.
Relationship.
Between the spheres up until that point. The infiniteness of Hashem is only found in the sphere of Chochmah, in the sphere of wisdom. Because he said way back in chapter 2 that wisdom is Kayachma. It's the
right.
ability or the power of the potential. That's what the word chachma means if you break it down. In English, the word wisdom doesn't mean a whole lot different than understanding or knowledge. Mm-hmm. But chachma means a potential. So how big is the potential? Potential is infinite. Is it really infinite? No. It's not really infinite because it just could do, really, practically speaking, just so much. Okay? If you have a piece of paper, how many possible different letters could you write in different combinations on that piece of paper? There's an infinite number of possibilities of how many different letters you could write. And practically, there's only just so many letters you can write on an 8x11 piece of paper.
Right, correct.
So Chachma contains this infiniteness. But then that infiniteness now starts going through the creation process. That's what Moshe Kodavera was talking about when he said Seder Histalshulus. The right. creation of a something, a creation of cause and effect. This is what it means when we said, this is what I talked about before, when we talked about the end being planted in the beginning. Mm-hmm. The sphere of Keser is an intermediary between the emanator and the emanated. Excuse me. In order for something to be an intermediary, to know something to connect two things, especially if they're two opposing forces, it has to be able to relate to both.
Yeah.
So divine desire is truly infinite. There is no limitation. It's before the creation process in all actuality. Keser, for the most part, in Tanya, he never talks about 10 spheres. He never says Keser. Because that's not really what this world is about. That's the desire to have the world. That's pre-world. That's pre-even the world anything. But Kesser is a created entity. Hashem, I couldn't say created, but Hashem, Kesser is a limited expression. Yes. This is what Hashem wants. Mm-hmm. It's nothing else except what Hashem wants. So being that it is unlimited, so it can relate to Hashem. Being that it's very specific, so it can relate to every specific entity. And it is, it contains it, it's referred to as the lowest level of infinity. Which I always talk about, people, don't worry about levels of infinity, because there's lots of levels of infinity. How many fractions are there between 0 and 1? There's an infinite number of fractions, but it's still, you only have one thing. Lachinikra Keser Malchus, another name for Keser, which is talked about by Moshe Cordovero and all the other, many other Kabbalah books, is Keser Malchus, the crown of kingship. Ki ein Keser el lamelech, because who wears a crown besides Miss America? The king. Lachingama Malchus de Silas Nikra Keser Mamata Lamaila. Therefore, if you're going from the bottom up, the bottom is considered the highest, because if you invert it all up, because what happens now is Malchus, being the recipient of all of the godliness coming down, now has the job of making that infinite godliness relatable to finite entities. That's Malchus's purpose. So you could say that Keser and Malchus have the same function. It's a variation of a single thing. Keser connects the infiniteness of Hashem with creation. Malchus makes that godliness, that infiniteness, user-friendly, and then relates it to something so that it can actually be used. There's a difference between user-friendly and used. That's what Malchus is. Malchus is the plug-in, that it's the interface between total unity and infiniteness and separation and limitation. Lida, okay. Let's see. Umagam ki abriya saneshamas memena lihiyes yeshu davar nifrid bifnei asma ba'ilam abriya v'nikra b'shem Lida. And this, that Malchus comes, as we're going to stop, that Malchus is able to relate the higher levels of godliness, which are infinite, to a lower levels of entity in such a way that the infiniteness still maintains its integrity, but it does so in such a way that each entity can recognize its own existence, is called birth. Why specifically birth? Because, and you think about it, how does an embryo start? An embryo starts 23 chromosomes from the father, 23 chromosomes from the mother. They get together, they're united, it's one thing over there. It's a one-celled organism, totally and completely united. It has a potential to grow into anything. You've probably seen pictures from your sixth grade science book of a frog and a human zygote, that they look exactly the same, and at some point people stop looking like tadpoles. And so therefore we are now able to relate to Hashem is called birth. Because we now have, just like a baby now, has this full development and has a life within it. And the life within it can't be quantified. That's the way it is with the entire creation. Everything has life within it, and that life cannot be quantified. Life in and of itself, in every single organism, is infinite. Proof? Take an electron away from a hydrogen atom and see what happens. Hiroshima. Okay, so we are then, Nikri B'Shem Lida, we're three lines from the bottom of page 260, and we're going to talk about birth again next week. Could be continued.